Hello and welcome to SourceCast episode number 20. I'm your host, Joey Lombardi. In this week's episode, we're going to discuss the fight that is brewing between Amazon, Microsoft, and Oracle. All three companies are jockeying for position. They want to be number one, and they are using every dirty trick in the book. We're going to talk about the company that IBM bought this week, because that is a perennial topic on this podcast. And we're going to talk about how EMC and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise are both trying to sell off assets to be more flush with cash. Let's start the show. Our lead story this week involves multiple suppliers. There is no way to disentangle what's happening and focus on just one. It's like a domino effect. Let's start with Microsoft. If you've been listening to the podcast over the last month, we have been discussing Microsoft and their openness to open source. Microsoft is introducing Red Hat into their cloud platforms. They're making more of their products available on Red Hat, such as their version of SQL. And now they're quote-unquote giving away free SQL Server licenses in 2016. By free, using air quotes with my fingers, customers need to be part of Microsoft's software assurance licensing schema. Why is Microsoft doing this? Why are they making their SQL Server platform more available? Well, they're going after Oracle, of course. So as Microsoft is giving away free SQL Server licenses, they're also developing tools to make it easier to transition away from an Oracle database onto a Microsoft database. In addition, Amazon also developed and is offering a migration tool to make it easier to move away from Oracle and onto their own Amazon database product. The quote is, "The simpler the AWS makes it to transition to cloud, the more enterprise will consider leveraging AWS to move from current systems of record to the cloud." Apparently, this database migration tool has been in existence for some time, but it's been greatly improved. According to Amazon Web Services Vice President Adam Silbsky, he stated that many hundreds of companies have used the earlier version of the tool to migrate more than 1,000 databases. You can clearly see that we're now getting into the meat of enterprise adoption of the cloud. So Amazon has a database product. Microsoft has a database product that they've had for years. They are both aggressively making announcements about database products, clearly going after Oracle this week. Why do you think that is? Oracle has clearly stated their desire to become a predominant cloud company, and their sales are showing progress in that area. They're showing enough progress to make competitors Amazon and Microsoft concerned. Let's talk about Oracle's growth in the cloud space. Revenue from cloud solutions, which include both software as a service and platform as a service, grew by 57% last year to $583 million. Non-GAAP, software as a service and platform as a service, gross margins are up 51% in the third quarter, compared with 43% in the second quarter. Oracle is saying that they're in hypergrowth. Never to be short on words, Oracle founder Larry Ellison also explains why Microsoft and Amazon are going for Oracle's throat. And I quote, "People are coming after us because we are by far the leaders in database. If you are in the database business, the only one you can go after is us. So of course Amazon, if they're going to be in the database business, is coming after us. And of course Microsoft wants to be bigger in the database. They have to come after us. We're the biggest player. We see our customers with literally millions of applications and millions of users on those applications built on Oracle database, wanting to move those applications into the cloud. And we do that very well." So that's Larry's take on their cloud and database business and why people are coming after them. Microsoft Cloud and Enterprise Corporate VP Takeshi Nomoto told Business Insider that their SQL Server offering generated lots of excitement among Oracle customers because, I quote, "The level of frustration I've seen in their customers has been extremely high." So while Oracle is the number one in database, there seems to be a growing frustration amongst their customer base, and there is an appetite for a strong competitor to emerge. We've seen this in England. We've seen this in various states that are dependent upon Oracle platforms. Oracle must really be making progress for both Microsoft and Amazon to come on this strong. Maybe Microsoft sees this as their last chance to make a stand and to get people indoctrinated in their own database products before they move into the cloud. Speaking of last chance, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise and Dell have something in common this week. Last week, Meg Whitman trashed EMC. But this week, the old competitors have common ground. As we discussed last week, Dell is attempting to unload non-critical assets, namely businesses, to help raise cash to pay for the acquisition of EMC. It's becoming evident that Perot Systems will be sold off for at least $3 billion cash, maybe a little bit more. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise is also attempting to sell off some assets, specifically the company Emphasis that they purchased a few years ago. Investment company Blackstone is rumored to be the front runner to purchase Emphasis. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise stake in the Indian-based company is estimated at around $940 million. The total market value of Emphasis is currently around $1.6 billion. The question is, what does Hewlett-Packard Enterprise need the cash for? They're not even going through the same efforts to terminate employees like IBM did. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise has been rebadging employees through consulting companies to avoid the termination fees that IBM is concerned about picking up. The sister company to Perot Systems that Dell owns is EDS, which was another Ross Perot company, but they've been sending a lot of those jobs offshore. So the question is, why is Hewlett-Packard Enterprise trying to raise cash? Is Hewlett-Packard Enterprise gearing up to purchase another company, which would be counterintuitive to the criticisms that they just heaped against Dell and EMC? They just said that Dell and EMC are too big, and they were trying to get strategically smaller and more nimble. Would an acquisition slow them down? And if they're not pursuing an acquisition, what do they need the cash for? Pay attention to this one. And now we'll shift over to IBM. I mentioned in the intro that IBM bought another company, and I wasn't lying. But this is an odd one. So IBM purchased a customer relationship management configuration company called Optivia. They're based strictly in England, and they specialize in configuring CRM products, specifically Microsoft CRM products, for the British government. So it's a company that does consulting and configurations in the CRM space for another product that's not traditionally IBM. What's their game plan here? The press release says that the company will provide IBM with much-needed diversification and potential growth in its cloud portfolio. But will it? Last year, consulting giant Accenture purchased Salesforce partners Tequila and Cloud Sherpas. That was to help expand Accenture's expertise in the CRM cloud with the biggest platform on the market currently, which is Salesforce. To compare, Optivia is a UK-based company that specializes in Microsoft CRM specifically for the British government. If that's a lucrative consulting market for IBM, I suppose it makes sense, but it sounds like there are some designs for expansion across Europe, and I'm very interested to see how that's going to happen. To mirror the main story this week, IBM's artificial intelligence platform, Watson, has some competitors, specifically Google. Google has a platform called DeepMind, and over the last week, they have replicated a famous IBM experiment that occurred in the early 1990s. In the 90s, IBM challenged a famous chess player to a match against the supercomputer Deep Blue. Google has taken it a step further. They have challenged excellent players at the game Go, and apparently Go is infinitely more complex due to the number of options that a player can make in every move. The brute force tactic that Deep Blue used in 1997 would be impossible. But DeepMind managed it and won 3 out of 4 matches. So that is some good press for Google's artificial intelligence platform. Additionally, one of Watson's founding fathers started a new company. Stephen Pratt, who was working on Watson for several years, left IBM in February and has now announced he's starting his own company called Noodle AI. The company is playing directly in IBM's backyard by going after a combination of artificial intelligence and data analysis for corporate customers. Mr. Pratt is not alone. He's partnering with TPG, which is a $70 billion investment firm. And since we're talking about artificial intelligence, I'm going to very quickly shift over to news that you can use, because the leading article was that 2/3 of Americans think that robots will take over our jobs by 2065. Pew Research polled 2,000 American adults, and 65% said a significant portion of the work that humans do right now will be automated within the next 50 years. However, when Pew posed the question of whether their job, in particular, would undergo changes, most respondents were quick to say that even in 2065, their jobs would exist in their current forms. 80% of the people surveyed seemed to feel that they would still be gainfully employed in the same type of job. I will come out and say that my job will be drastically different thanks to artificial intelligence. The nature of procurement and strategic sourcing is already shifting, turning more into an analytics-based job, leveraging the data that's available today to make better, educated decisions. That trend is only going to continue. So anybody thinking that their job is going to remain exactly the same 50 years from now, good luck with that. There are also a couple of articles and news that you can use to talk about millennials and some of the pressures that they're facing that makes an observation that millennial women are burning out more quickly. The author of the study examined the numbers through gender socialization theory, which claims that society puts certain expectations on people based on their gender from a very young age. Where women are more often expected to provide the majority of family care and raise children, men are expected to be the breadwinners and put obligations before family. That was supported by the findings showing that women experience significantly higher rates of work overload or feel that they are unable to complete their assigned duties in the work timeline allowed, notes the University of Kansas study. So as American women earn more degrees than men and higher degrees than men than in previous generations, these family obligations or family stress points of caretaking roles need to be observed more. I don't know if one study can generalize a whole generation, but it brings up an interesting stress point that certainly warrants further investigation and study. That is something you can definitely chew on, and I'm going to leave you with that. Thank you so much for listening this week, and I will be back with episode number 21. Take care.